Good evening, folks. Go ahead.
This is the NLA Hams Net for the 6th of December, 2017. My name is Terry Moore, and my call sign is KI0RE. I'm from Colorado, and here we talk about this net happens every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and we talk about things NLA-ish and Hamish. Everyone is welcome to contribute, and we'd like to hear what you have to say, so jump in. I'll first open it up for any questions from last week. If anybody has anything to say, please call now. Doesn't sound like it, huh? We're currently finishing up the ARRL Ham Radio License Manual, 3rd edition. It's good through June 30th, 2018. And it was on page 6 of the Choosing a Ham Radio at the back after the question. And, so at the back, the blue pages that are questions from the ham test, you'll see choosing a ham radio. And let's see, let's continue on. Frequencies and modes. If your interest lies primarily in using the local FM repeaters and simplex channels, information about what frequency is most used is available from your local radio clubs. And that's a good thing. I want to encourage everybody make contact with their local radio club, because that's important. You'll get help, you'll get mentors, you'll get hams that are willing to explain things to you. Sit down and explain it. And you can find it by going to ARRL.org and looking for clubs. There's one part of it that you can look for clubs. Put in where you're at, and it'll tell you what clubs are near you. I would encourage you to get that and do that. Okay, they also publish an ARRL repeater directory. Used to be a tiny little thing, but it got too fat, so it's a little larger now, and they put it on spiral bound so it'll lay flat, which is a big plus. Ask about the coverage in the repeaters when you go talk to somebody at your local repeater. The most popular VHF-UHF radios for FM voice and data are dual band, meaning that they can transmit on both the 2-meter, 144 to 148 megahertz, and the 70-centimeter, 420 to 450 megahertz bands. Higher-end units allow you to monitor several bands at once and listen on one band while transmitting on the other. And that does come in handy sometimes because of the way repeaters are linked together. Whether you need the radio to cover 50 megahertz, 222 megahertz, or 1.2 gigahertz will depend on the activity in your area. And that's another good reason to go talk to your local hams at a club. The first two are often used by emergency communication teams, and the last is more likely to be used in the densely populated areas, the 1.2 gigahertz. Crossband repeater capability, which I have on my radio, receiving on one band and retransmitting the signal on the other band is a nice to have, but not usually needed. I use it because I set up my radio for a crossband repeat, and then I can use the smallest signal I'm capable of using, 1 watt on my HT. It goes back over to my car and then out at 35 watts to the repeater that I'm talking on. And so I can operate in the local area very well that way. It's kind of handy. Receiver coverage comes in 3 flavors. Ham band receive can tune all the ham bands plus narrow ranges above and below the band edges for amateur auxiliary services such as MARS, which is the military-affiliated radio service. Extended receive includes reception of selected frequency ranges such as those in Table 2. Now, Table 2 is useful non-amateur bands. And you know, they talk about the AM broadcast band, 550 kilohertz to 1.8 megahertz, the shortwave broadcast, 3 megahertz to 25 megahertz, low band VHF, 30 to 50 megahertz, and your CB channels are real close to that edge. I think they're about 27 megahertz. FM broadcast, aviation band, 118 to 144. High band VHF, 148 to 174. You'll often see a lot of robotic stuff. AWOSs are on that. Marine, 156 to 158 megahertz. NOAA weather, 162.4 to 162.55. They put 10 channels in that thing, and I think there's actually more than that. Excellent thing to know about, because a lot of ham radios will tune to that band, 162 megahertz. And you can listen to NOAA weather, and I've used on every one of my radios, I load up all of those frequencies. I use 10 memories, and I load them all up, so that no matter where I am, if I can get one, I will get it right there, and I'll get the weather. Military aviation, that's a lot of fun to listen to, 225 to 389 megahertz, and then government 406 to 420 megahertz, and then UHF 450 to 470. Around here, what you'll hear is half of something on the 450 to 470 megahertz in UHF, about 455 somewhere, 456, is the downlink frequency for like the helicopters or the airplanes that are up doing traffic or emergency situations on the radio. You can listen to their side as they talk. You can't hear the other side, but that's mainly the one you want to hear anyway. Then they got a nice little chart on the bottom that shows the VLF from VLF, which is 3 kilohertz on this chart, to EHF, which is up to 300 gigahertz. And I guess it's just showing those bands with the little black strips up on top of this. It kind of shows you where everything fits. Let's see.
Comment?
Yes, please do.
In my younger years, when they used to have these imported German radios, Blaupunk and some of the others, you know, they always had a short wave section in there. And I always wondered, you know, what frequency band does that cover? And looking at the chart at the bottom of page 6, it lays it out just about exactly over the HF band, which says a lot to me. Robert?
Yes, and you must note that we have a little bit different idea in America about what should be dedicated to hams. And there's countries around the world that don't agree with us. And up on 40 meters, which is 7.15 to 7.3 or 7.5, there are some guys that are right in the middle of it. And you just have to work around them. And there's nothing you can do. Don't even worry about reporting them because they're in a different country and nothing's going to be done. But it's really good to get a quality HF receiver and then get a good antenna like you got, Jan, and then kind of do some listening. I remember shortwave listening was always kind of crimped because I never had the greatest antenna and I didn't get much. And it sounded like everybody was transmitting on the same frequency. Well, they weren't. I had a wideband receiver that was listening on a wide set of frequencies, and I was hearing all of them at once. Once you get a good ham receiver, you can tune in to a particular frequency and hear just that guy. It made my shortwave listening so much better. I enjoyed it so much more being able to do that. Okay, any other comments, questions? Even though some VHF, UHF amateur radios with wideband receive can tune in AM broadcast, shortwave broadcast, SWBC, shortwave broadcast, and aviation, AM signals, I love listening to aviation. And that's something you got to realize, that the shortwave is sometimes single sideband, sometimes it's AM. But all of the air bands are AM signals, and they do that for a reason. And that's because a particular airport might have the same frequency as this other one that's 20, 30 miles away. And by having AM, the signal is greatly attenuated by the time it gets to your airport. And so even though you hear somebody way back in the background, oh, this is November Charlie Delta, blah, 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 I'm landing on runway 33. Well, your airport doesn't have a runway 33. And then you say, oh, that's at the other airport. You can instantly get it out of the way. So they've done some tricks like that to kind of use up all the airspace. But anyway, aviation, most cannot receive single sideband or CW signals. Now, last year about this time, I was looking at the Sagen radio, and I went ahead and got one. And what I found out as soon as I got it was it didn't do CW, which is Morse code, continuous wave. It's either on or off, or single sideband. I was really disappointed with the radio, but I still use it in certain applications down here around the house, and thus are unsuitable on EHF bands. So make sure that whatever radio you get, even if you're going to do software listening, HF shortwave listening, blah, blah, blah. My tongue's getting ahead of my mouth. Make sure that it can handle single sideband, AM, and continuous wave. Any one of those might be required for what you want to listen to. And you know, when you think about it, if we ever get going with a net at a certain time, anybody could listen in if they had a shortwave radio, and they could listen to our HF and be able to be plugged in to the whole thing. They just can't talk back, and that's a key thing when you're talking. You want to get some word out, maybe some local news or some news from far away, and you want the truth. Okay, receiving VHF AM aviation signals, sometimes called airband, I don't, is also handy for tracking down and identifying sources of interfering noise, such as from power lines or appliances. Also, I used to go out walking when I lived over in Broomfield, and that's a town here in Colorado, and right across the highway, the Boulder-Denver Turnpike, right across that Boulder-Denver Turnpike was what used to be called Jeffco Airport. Now it's called Rocky Mountain Regional Airport. And I would just listen to the tower. I'd turn to the tower frequency, and as I walked, I'd listen to it, and I'd say, oh, that jet's about to take off. I don't know how many times I was listening to it, and I heard that this one MiG, I knew his call sign, and when he was started to take off, I would stop what I'm doing and go to the highest spot so I could catch him as soon as he left, and it was a lot of fun. Many municipal and government systems use trunking systems in the VHF and UHF bands. Trunking systems share a few channels among many users by changing the frequency of individual radios under the control of the central station. These cannot be received by ham radios or scanners without trunking features. So if you're looking to go into, you know, listening to the local, used to you could grab a Bearcat scanner or a Uniden scanner, either one, and throw it up there and plug in the frequencies for your local fire department and police department and let her rip, and you'd hear everything. Not so anymore. You might in some of the little towns across America, but now they're mostly all in this trunking system. And for that, you need the trunking feature. And it'll work, but you got to have the right radio. So that's another thing that you got to look for. Okay, now we're up to page 7 on power input and output. Transmitter output power is crucial to successful communications between, and we're going back into the ham, less the listening part. As a ham radio operator, you want to be able to transmit as well as receive. Along with antenna choice, it affects community power FX communication range. Check with local hams about the power levels required to hit. And when I say hit, that means I can transmit from here and my signal will reach the repeater. So check with hams about the power levels required to hit some popular repeaters. I do know that here in Colorado, I've been on my bicycle with my little ICOM W32, and I've had a running conversation on one particular repeater with a guy in Fort Collins, a guy just this side of Pueblo, and a guy out on the plains near Lyman, all at the same time. It was the four of us talking while I was on my bicycle in Broomfield. So you can accomplish a lot if you think through it and you buy the right equipment and you work it right. And, if you go down the hill and the repeater's on the other side of the hill, you're not going to hit it. But if you're on top of the hill, maybe you can hit that repeater. So that kind of thing. Everything has to come into play. Where was I? So the local terrain should be considered, and that's what I was just talking about. Flat, open areas require less power. A handheld radio should be capable of 3 to 5 watts of output for consistent coverage. Mobile radios, 10 to 50 watts, have far better coverage, and that's absolutely correct, but require more current, such as from a car battery or power supply. And I just want to insert something here. Yeah, if you expect to run off of the run your 35 or 50 watt ham radio on transmit off of the cigarette lighter plug-in, forget it. Some will handle it, but most of the time they won't. The wires aren't big enough. You're heating them up every time you key up. So, that's a good test to make. How well does it work through there? I've had several that I plugged into that, and I couldn't do it on. As soon as I'd key up, the radio would go dead because it's pulling too much current. It can't handle it. And then I'd back off, change the fuse, and back off, and all of a sudden I found out it would work on the low power setting, which is 10 watts, and that effectively does everything I need. You kind of got to go through this and think about things. And applying thought is a skill that I'm wondering if we all have anymore. There's a lot of people that are growing up without it. Most radios have variable power settings to conserve power and battery capacity. That's what I was talking about, going to low. Handheld radios are sealed and rechargeable multi-cell battery packs that fit in a specific radio and are rarely interchangeable between models, and that's a fact. You can buy one of the same manufacturer. It won't fit on the radio, another different radio. It is wise to purchase a spare pack. I can't and rotate, swap the packs regularly. I can't emphasize that enough. One battery is never going to get you all the way you want to go. So have a spare, and when you go to buy the radio, maybe you'll get a break on the price if you buy an extra battery. If you're going to buy some equipment, buy an extra battery for your radio because you will get to a situation where you want to swap it out. Let's see. Packs hold regular alkaline AAA or AA cells are important to have for operations away from home or in emergencies when recharging power may not be available. Remember to recycle dead and weak batteries properly. Several battery options are described in Table 3. Now, Table 3 has a handheld radio with a piece missing on the back at the bottom. And the battery contacts are in this rechargeable pack. And then, so the rechargeable pack is closed and glued together. You don't open it. You put it into a charger or you put it into the radio. And then the other one is a AAA or AA batteries that you put in the same form factor of the battery pack that's rechargeable. And it goes right on the radio just like the rechargeable one, only you can use all these another set of batteries, and all you got to do is replace the batteries and put it back on. You're ready to go. I recommend getting a rechargeable battery, and if you want, get one that'll work on the AAAs or the AAs, but keep them charged. Okay, the higher battery's energy density or specific energy, the longer a battery of given size will last. Energy density drops with temperature, so a cold battery won't deliver as much energy. You're slowing down the chemistry of the battery that generates the electricity. I mean, that's pretty easy to understand. As one at room temperature, most batteries are rated to be stored at temperatures from minus 20 to plus 45. You want to save your batteries? Put them in the fridge. That slows down the charge, and then when you're ready to use them, warm them up by wearing them on your shirt for a few minutes. It'll be a little cold spot, but it'll get warm, and then they're ready to go. Handheld radios are sold with a well-mounted supply or wall wart that charges the battery slowly. This may be inconvenient during emergency or heavy use. A desk or drop-in charger charges the packs quickly and holds the radio. And then let's see, table 3 at the bottom talks about types of batteries. And I don't know exactly what I want to say, but the energy density is highest on lithium ion, and they're getting better at that all the time. There's some new batteries that are just outrageously good, and they will beat lithium ion, but I don't know if you can get them yet. Let's see. So drop-in desk charger charges it up quickly, which is harder on the battery, but in a pinch and in an emergency, that might be what you need. If the radio can charge from 12 volts, it can also be charged on a vehicle with an automotive adapter. So there you go. You might want to plug in into that cigarette lighter instead of plugging in your radio. Run wires to your radio, heavy wires, so that you can transmit on any frequency or any power level you want. But run your charger off of the cigarette lighter. And then you can always have a battery charging. And then when you get low, you swap them out. Let's see. An automotive adapter that allows your handheld radios to charge and possibly operate from a vehicle cigarette lighter or other 12-volt source is useful if AC power is unavailable. Not all handheld radios can transmit while connected to chargers. So that's another thing that you want to consider. Will your ham radio transmit if it's hooked, being powered by something other than the battery pack at the back of the radio? My ICOM would do it, but it wasn't really good for it. I've seen other radios that will do it just fine. You can take the battery pack out, and it'll transmit all day long. But just be aware that I used to put a 12-volt motorcycle battery, and then I build up a connector that I would just plug into the top of the radio, and I used the 12 volts off the 12-volt motorcycle battery when I was riding the bus and sitting on the side of the bus so that I could see the mountains where all the repeaters were. Radios for base, portable, or mobile use require an external power source. This may be a vehicle's electrical system, a deep cycle battery, or an AC-operated power supply. I have a power supply sitting right next to me that'll pump out all of the watts and voltages I need. And it plugs into the wall, so it's not much use once I lose power. But I use it, and it has a cigarette lighter, so I can plug. I can test all my stuff in here, and I just like it a lot. Let's see. Deep cycle, blah, blah, blah. Mobile radios may require 20 amps or more at full power output. No kidding. That's why you run some number 8 or number 10 wire from the battery directly at the terminal all the way back through the firewall, and then put the connector on the end that the radio requires, fused on both sides, and plug it in. Now you have a good connection. Go to a ham club. They'll help you get this straight. Power supplies and cables used to connect the radio must be able to supply the maximum required current. And remember, it's current that's going to heat up those wires. So you want nice, thick wires for your radio at a proper voltage. Check the radio specifications for input current to find out how much current is needed. The radio manual should also specify that wire size, what wire size is given cable length is needed to ensure adequate voltage. Oh, that's another thing. Some of the radios now, you can put the all of the actual radio in the trunk, and the faceplate, which controls the radio, and the speaker, you can pull that and put it up front wherever you want it. And so you can actually control the radio from the front, but it's in the speaker. Well, if you run all the way from the front all the way back, make sure you got big enough wires to handle that current, because it's going to handle it all the way through. Okay, any questions so far? That's terrible. I like questions. I like comments. I like suggestions, and I like criticism. Squelch and tones. Squelch is the circuitry in FM radios that prevents the user from having to listen to noise or unwanted signals by muting the radio's audio output unless the proper type of signal is received. The radio's manual will explain how to use the squelch level control knob. These Bofangs don't have a squelch control knob. You set the squelch at a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7, 9, I don't know what the numbers are. But you find one that works for you, and then you leave it at that. And it's kind of a tricky to get into the right programming and change the squelch on a particular channel, which makes it a little bit harder to use. And you know, when you're buying a radio, you can buy the cheap Bofang, or you can buy a little more expensive one that's from a manufacturer that's been in a long time. And I just to tell you, there's ICOM, there's Kenwood, there's Yaesu, and there's MFJ and Lenco. Those are the five major ones that I know about. The first three, ICOM, Yaesu, and now I can't remember what I said, Kenwood, those are just super easy to use, and they're a lot of fun. But you're going to pay a price for all that extra programming that they program in, and you're going to have to learn how to get used to your radio. Well, you have to learn how to get used to programming your radio anyway. So the Bofang isn't bad. It's good, cheap way to get on, and you can use Chirp to make a whole set of radios so that if SHTF, you can instantly give a whole bunch of people radio communications. Carrier squelch, the simplest and most common type of squelch, mutes the radio when no signal stronger than a present preset selectable threshold is present. Tone receive squelch requires a specific subaudible tone for the received radio to be heard, as when accessing a repeater. This keeps you from hearing other users on the same frequency, just like privacy codes on the popular handheld radios that use the FRS and GMRS channels. You will have to listen to the channel before transmitting. Digital code squelch, a continuous sequency of such subaudible tones must be received during a transmission to keep the output audio turned on. DCS is used by groups sharing a frequency so that they only hear radios from the other group members, like tone receive squelch, listen for before transmitting. Call sign squelch, digital systems such as D-Star send the call sign of the receiver station along with the transmitted signal. The station called will then be alerted to the incoming call, so you have to know who you think is going to be calling you on that one. Attenuation. Some radios attenuate the received signal when the squelch threshold is set to high levels. This reduces interference from overload interference where strength paging and commercial signals are present. Monitor. An FM radio's monitor button or key temporarily defeats or opens the squelch so that you can hear any stations using the channel. This is used to listen for weak signals or for other stations before transmitting. I want to intersperse something here before I get to CTS, S&PL. And that is that there's usually a reverse button on the good radios. I don't think I've found it on the Bofang. It might be there, but I haven't found it yet. I haven't looked in a while. But a reverse, when you're talking a ham duplex, which is when I hit the key, I'm talking on a repeater, and when I hit the transmit key, the push-to-transmit key, it jumps to the repeater's input frequency, and then I'm talking directly to the repeater. Well, sometimes the guy you're talking to can't hit the repeater, but if you listen on the reverse side, you listen to the repeater's input frequency, you're close enough that you can hear him. So that's a little trick the hams use when the repeater isn't picking you up. And I've used it a few times. Works really well. And from that point, I usually get them off of the repeater and suggest that we go simplex and get onto a simplex channel, 145.495. 147.495, I think I've used. All new radios can generate subaudible repeater access tones. These are also called PL or CTCSS tones. Some have a feature called tone scan that enables the radio to determine what access tones a repeater requires by listening to the stations using it. This is very useful when traveling or accessing an unfamiliar repeater. Yeah, it is. Learn how to use it. And if it's first time you go across country and you get into a town, you can use that to find a local ham in the local area by hitting the repeater and then listening for what the repeater does for a tone. Okay, DTMF or touch tone. That's dual frequency tones are used to dial phone numbers through a repeater, auto patch is what they call it, or enter IRLP or Echolink access codes. A radio's ability to store and play back sequences of DTMF tones saves a lot of time when using either service. What am I talking about? A lot of repeaters, hams have used repeaters for years. When it gets quiet on the repeater, you hit a certain key sequence, and then you get a dial tone, and you dial the number you want, and it goes out. And I've talked to a lot of different people, mainly back to home, on DTMF, using DTMF codes to call an actual phone and talk to them, and I usually tell them up front, hey, I'm on a ham radio. I can't hear you when I'm talking, and when I let go and I'm not talking, that's when I can hear you. So talk when I'm not talking. Let's see. Oh, there's a chart. There's an illustration, figure 3 at the bottom of page 9. That kind of shows you there's two knobs on a lot of these. My ICOM is like this, my ICOM W32. Your volume is the top knob, and you can adjust volume, but your big one is a squelch ring, and you can set the squelch differently for every time as you're going. So any questions? We're getting near the last here, so now's a good time to talk about other things if there's anything anybody wants to talk about.
I got a question, Terry. I was looking at these two-way radios I've got, and it's talking on the back about 1 through 7, 15 through 22. You got to have, what is it, the GMRS license. And and then it says, but if you're in Canada, you don't have to have that. The Canada is free for all up there. What's the deal?
Well, Canada has different rules Canada has different rules controlling amateur radio. They're like ours, but they're not the same. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, it just the way the wording on this package made it think that they don't have any rules in Canada. So,
well, I've addressed the line A. Line A is an imaginary line. It's like 50 miles south of the northern border, that latitude of America. And within there, you're not allowed to use the 440 to 450 megahertz, I think it is. And I could be wrong. Don't hold me to this. But you're only allowed to use certain frequencies once you get close to Canada, because in Canada, the particular bands are shifted a little bit. And I'm not surprised that their GMRS type of service and their FRS type service is a little different up there. That doesn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm.
You got to remember, we're talking other countries. And that's why they made the ITU regions 1, 2, and 3. We live in ITU region 2, I believe. And it's an international telecommunications union. And what they try to do there is to make everybody the same worldwide. But a country doesn't have to belong to the ITU. And if they feel that they want to do something different on a particular frequency, they can, because they're sovereign. So check where you're going and what you're doing before you go there. That's all I can answer. Does that answer your question?
Well, these are 30-mile range radios, and it says you won't get that range unless you use GMRS. Do you have any idea what the range is in the 8 to 14 frequency? Is it half that, or is it very?
Well, you're allowed to use I don't know if you're allowed to use slightly more power. You may be. I hope somebody else knows. But the key is that FRS, you cannot use a repeater. And GRMS, you can. And so the repeater can be a little bit different power level, and you can reach a lot further. So you kind of got to temper what they're saying with realize that it went through a marketing department before it made it out. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. Does that answer your question?
More or less, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know all the details about it right now. But it's easy to find on the internet and start going through it.
Sure. Will do.
And you're supposed to have a license that costs you about $70 for GRMS. And that's the upper
bucks.
Frequencies, like you said.
How long does it take to get it back?
It takes about 3-4 weeks. It's not bad. As a matter of fact, the universal licensing system, you can get it almost immediately. If you go up to the ULS, that's the Universal Licensing System, up to the FCC.gov, and start going down through there and tell it you want your GRMS license, you can pay for it online if you have a card, a debit card or credit card, and it will assign it right now because you have the money right now, and they like to do it out. You know, I think there's a couple of days where they say, okay, you can't use it until that. I can't remember. But all you got to do is go up online to the Universal Licensing System. You can look up KIA0RE, and you can see what licenses I own up there. So
what would happen in a real countrywide emergency if, let's say, a person hadn't gotten a license, had the equipment, and started reaching out for help or sending information or gathering information?
Well, one of the prime directives is that these ham bands, we want you to use it in the nice way. But if there's an emergency threatening life or property, you're authorized to use whatever you need to use to get the right help. So if we had a nationwide emergency, time to get all the repeater power and all of the radio power that you can muster and use it to get yourself help or your region help or your city help. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes obvious sense. So that would be
yeah,
the
once,
obvious.
Once you can do that, if there's a nationwide emergency, then go for it.
For it.
Give
yeah,
somebody
okay.
a ham radio and say, I'll call you on that in about 15 minutes.
Yeah. Okay, I'll let you get back to what you're doing there. I just wanted to know those couple of things while you said questions.
It's all right. If you got another one, we'll answer that question. We got about 3 minutes left. Matter of fact, I think we'll stop right about there. So we'll stop at the top of page 10. So I managed to make it through about 4 pages today. And it gets into talking HF equipment. There's a lot happening here. Anybody else got any questions or comments or criticisms? There's 24
Hello,
pages
fun.
Total. Go ahead.
Hello, John 83ZI.
Oh, hi, John. Good to hear you.
Hello again. Yeah, I'm glad that these calls are continuing. I haven't been on in a few months. Just a quick comment regarding that last exchange. And this is probably, I'm sure you've emphasized this in other calls, but having the gear is important, yes, but training is critical. And in an emergency, if you haven't trained with the gear, very few people are going to be able to pick that up and communicate effectively, in that situation. So one's got to be prepared with the skills involved in radio communication.
Good point, John. Thank you.
Yes, I would like add that goes doubly for an HF rig. The little Bofengs are pretty simple compared to an HF rig. There's so many buttons and dials and knobs to twist and carry on. You can get yourself in a lot of trouble real quick trying to find something. So I think that it's really, really absolutely necessary to practice before you actually need to use these things. Over.
Good points, both. I agree 100%. Helps if you have practice, if you have used it. That's why it's good. Get on the air. Get your ham license. You only need 26 questions right out of 35 questions, and all the questions are in the back of this book we've been reading from. So get the book. Read it. Take the test in the back, the test questions. Go over them once. Try a practice test up on QRZ or some other website and get your license. There's nothing stopping you from getting a license except 26 correct answers out of 35, and they're all multiple choice, and they're all in the back of this book. Nothing stops you from doing that. And all you have to do, once you do it, then you'll be able to use the radio, and then you start getting practice. And over time, you develop an ear for things. So the first time you start listening on HF, there's so much static, you can't believe that somebody actually got something out of that, because lots of times the signal is buried in the static. But if you're listening and concentrating on it, you can hear the message. But it takes a little bit of time to work that, and not everybody can just sit down and do it. And just like everyone said today, you may have the right equipment, but you may not know how to use it. Okay, anything else?
AB3ZI, again, briefly, regarding the HF gear. I got my first HF rig at the end of August, a Yaesu FT-857 Delta. I'm thrilled with it. And I try to learn something new about it every week, and it'll take me at least months to master it, if I can ever do that. But I haven't done Packer radio with it yet, and I'm still learning to use many of the menu functions, as well as just getting acclimated to HF operating in general. So definitely, just like any discipline, I often liken it to photography. I mean, a few people can become masters of photography in a few years, even of training and you know, studying of that discipline. So AB3ZI, over.
Thank you, John. Fully right. And I want to reinforce what he just said. And that also explains why John hasn't been here for a couple, 3 months. He's been working on his HF rig, trying to get used to it, learn how to use it. So anyway, this is KI0RE. I'm Terry from Colorado. This is the NLA Hems net. We're going to close it down now. We hold this net every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Anyone is welcome to contribute. You don't have to be a member of the NLA or anything else. Just jump on and talk to it. We'd love to hear what you got to say. And we thank everyone. A lot of good activity tonight. I really appreciate it. And I'm going to say that the net is now closed. Thank you.